हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 21. Okay, Srila Prabhupada adds, there are four objectives in human life, namely religiosity, dharma, economic development, artha, sense gratification, kama, and liberation, moksha, for the bondage of material existence. People generally aspire for religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, but a devotee has no other desire than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, both in this life and in the next. The special mercy for the unalloyed devotee is that the Lord saves him from hard labor to achieve the results of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Of course, if one wants such benefits, the Lord certainly awards them. India, for example, although a devotee was not much interested in release from material bondage. Instead, he desired sense gratification and a high standard of material happiness in the heavenly planets. Vritrasura, however, being an unalloyed devotee, aspired only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord arranged for him to go back to Godhead after his bodily bondage was destroyed by Indra. Vritrasura requested Indra to release his thunderbolt against him as soon as possible, so that both he and Indra would benefit according to their proportionate advancement in devotional service. So this dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, these are goals in the material world. In the spiritual world, they're not goals. Right? Bhakti is a goal. Pleasing Krishna. Now we may engage dharma, artha, kama, and moksha in the Lord's service. Right? The devotee's on the liberated platform, but it's not about being on the liberated platform. He engages the liberated platform in the Lord's service. Because he's liberated, he has no material desire. Therefore, he can do everything for Krishna. Does that make sense? It's not that about the dharma, that the benefits you get, right? The religiosity means I get benefits, right? But he's using the tenets of religion in Krishna's service, right? Then the facilities that come from that, artha, the engagement of the senses, all in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So for the devotee, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are simply secondary aspects. Does that make sense? But for the karmi, these are primary. This is the difference. So that's why the devotee, it becomes confusing, because the devotee is working with dharma, artha, kama, moksha, and the materialist is working with dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, or the liberationist. Right? But so it appears the same. That's why it becomes confusing. But actually, it's not confusing, because for the devotee, it's secondary. It's not primary. Right? For the materialist, or for those in mundane consciousness, is primary. That's what they want. That's their goal. Does that make sense? So in working in them, you have to perform, and I have to obtain this particular aspect of dharma, artha, kama, or moksha. But getting that result is for Krishna. You understand? That's why Krishna is always, you know, the goal of all goals. Does that make sense? So in other words, bhakti or prema is the last ultimate position. Everything else after that is then secondary. Does that make sense? Let's take, for example, Mother Jashoda. Her love for Krishna is the primary aspect. Right? That she has, therefore, a particular form and activities, that's secondary. You understand? That supports the primary of her love for Krishna. Okay, now let's move over to that secondary. Okay? Now that she has that particular activities and all that, that'll be the primary. Then performing the mechanics of that, that will be the secondary. You know, so then within that is why you're doing this. You're trying to get a result in cooking. Mm-hmm. But then there's the technique in cooking. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So every secondary has a secondary behind that. Mm-hmm. And every secondary, there's a primary in front of that. But when you get to prema, there is none behind, in front of it. So in the material world, then, since prema is the original thing, therefore in the material world, lust is considered the original thing. Does that make sense? So everything goes back to desire. That's why nowadays then it appears that the society is so elevated, because it's all about desire. But what's the desire? Right, to be separate from Krishna. So it's not actually that developed. You understand? So it's the highest in the spiritual world is the lowest in the material world. In other words, love in the spiritual world is the highest, but lust in the material world is the lowest. Does that make sense? Yeah? It's opposite. It's like a reflection. You know what I'm saying? So you have a tree on the bank of a lake. You know, the tree, the leaves are up, the roots are down. But what? How's the tree in the lake? The roots are up, the leaves are down. It's opposite. Yeah, so that's how the material world works. It's opposite. Okay. So we're clear on this. That's why you see Priyavrata can engage Dharmartha Kama Moksha in the Lord's service. Because they're secondary elements. So, yeah.
Yeah. Before, though, wouldn't you say Dharma is not really a goal in and of itself? It's instrumental towards attaining the latter three?
That's there. You know, because you can always put back, you're performing that. It means the intelligent person is using Dharma to get the other three. Mm-hmm. But the point is being religious in itself is something that somebody wants to do, right? You know, he keeps his word. He gave his word, he'll keep it, even though there's so much difficulty. Right, yeah. There you have a great theme for a book or a movie, you know, like that. So it does have its aspect, you know, does that make sense? So that's the whole point is that the Dharma, because Dharma is where Swargiya Rasa is. Mm-hmm. And that Swargiya Rasa, then, if you're dealing in higher things, then that's where the taste is. So there may be Artha, there may be Kama, but there's always the element of Dharma. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Or they move it down to the next level of Rasa, is Partiva. Partiva Rasa. So then it's just about the senses. So you may follow Dharma because you get the senses. You know? Or you get money, but then you can use it in the senses. So that would be the lowest level. But the devotee works at the highest level, which is Vaikuntha Rasa. So then, therefore, it's just about, he uses Dharmartha Kama for, does that make sense? So ultimately, even though we'll say Dharmartha Kama and Moksha, you actually only have within that three real goals. It means it'll be either sense gratification, religion, or devotion. Within those five, excuse me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Because those are actually where Rasa sits. Oh. Artha is in between Dharma and Kama.
It's a means.
Yeah, it's a means. And Moksha is in between Bhakti and Dharma.
Yeah.
So it has the qualities of both. Because if you say if you have money, then you can have sense gratification. Doesn't mean necessarily do. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. But by Dharma, then you can get money and you can get liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But what's the actual taste? Bhakti or the senses?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the point, is that either you're looking towards Krishna, so it's bhakti, or you're looking away, and so therefore it's kama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that? So it's actually, that's the interesting thing. These formulas are quite simple,
mm-hmm.
but they're very, very sophisticated. So everything's included. Mm-hmm. Sri Vritrasura continued, right? So he wants bhakti and Indra, he wants sense gratification, the facilities that go along with it. So you can see is that the two ends of the scale. Though they're both devotees, right? Because this is for devotees. Karmis, we don't even have to discuss this. Right? Already in Paranjana, that's been discussed. Right? We know what the materialist is, but we also know what the mixed devotee is. We also know what the pure devotee is. That's the expertise of Narad Muni. In one analogy? In one analogy, then he's shown all three. So that's the amazing thing about the Bhagavatam. In these chapters that, let's say, you know, that forest of material enjoyment and all these ones that are the scary chapters, you know. But they're showing the gross materialist, the mixed devotee, and the pure devotee. Point is the situation is the same. The difference is how you view it. So that's our point. Is Dharma a goal? Or is it a means for sense gratification or liberation? Or is it actually just a secondary for bhakti? So this is what has to be defined. That's why we talk about intent. Right? But that's why also intent is based on scripture. Right? If you base intent on scripture, then that means the forms you are using, it's generally more obvious what you're doing. While if we use more modern speculative methods, it's not obvious what you're doing. Does that make sense? That's the thing. Let us say, for example, can't think of it. I mean, at least the feeling of the examples are there because there's unlimited amounts of them. But maybe someone who could help in this. Let us say someone does something for someone else, right? But their intent is they actually want to do something very nice for them, make them happy, right? But because they're not using traditional methods, they'll use some other speculative method, so they'll do something that they think is funny. But it's the actual funniness is something that the other person doesn't really like. Right? But it's being done in a light mood, so you're hoping that, or you're expecting that they'll take it in a light way. Do you understand the mood? Like that. So because you can't always tell what the intent is. But if you use the tradition, then at least it can be backed up by scripture. You can say, this is what, even if someone takes it wrong, you can still back it up by scripture. But the modern, how do you back it up? You know?
It all goes back to this political correctness.
Yes. It goes back to that, or you know, any of these kind of things. It's just that the common modes of nature, you expect that they will respond in the same way, but no two living entities are exactly the same, so it doesn't always work. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say for one person, they're about to do something, you know, so, you know, let's just say the person's going to Calcutta. Yeah? You know, so one person will say, well, hope you have a safe journey. The other person will say, you know, don't crash. You understand? And so depending upon the modes, they're both considered nice. One is concerned, caring, emotional. But, you know, the other group, they're not sentimental and all that. So they're just being intellectual. They don't crash, you know. Watch out for the dogs on the road there, you know. Don't, you know, you understand what I'm saying? So by their modes, they're thinking they're being really nice. Upbeat and all. You understand? But actually, what they're saying is inauspicious. Does that make sense? Like before people go on the stage, standard thing is break a leg. You know? Because the idea is say something inauspicious, then it won't happen because it's already been said. Now nice things will happen. And fortunately, because it's being said by actors, therefore it doesn't have any potency, so maybe it works. If a Brahmin said that, it might be a problem. Right? You know, you go out on the stage, how would that happen? It's a flat stage, but then the technician in the back, he somehow or another hits the wrong switch, and you know, those things in the stage, those platforms, they go up and down, you know, it moves, and you fall in there and break your leg. Yeah, so that's why the Brahmin is the director, and so they don't want to see those things, so they don't say those things. But yes, it's all to do with whatever is politically correct for that particular group and their modes.
Yeah, this way is very often very hard to understand.
Very?
Very hard to understand. Motives behind?
Yes, very hard to understand. You know, and also because people themselves don't know, then as you say, that wasn't actually what they meant, but you know, underlying that's what they meant, but they didn't mean to say it that way. They did, in other words, they wanted to say it, but they didn't want it to hurt you. You know,
sometimes opposite.
Yeah. You know, yeah, it's just very, yeah. No, it generally is opposite. You know, it's like the English gentleman after independence. He was going back to England because he didn't want to stay. And so then he had two dogs that were, you know, so dear to him and all that. But he was going back and couldn't take them with him. So he wouldn't want to leave them in India because he took care of them so nicely. And so if they couldn't get that kind of care, he would feel bad. Because if he left them with the Indians, of course, they're going to treat them as dogs because they are. You know, and so then therefore he shot them because he thought that was a better alternative than them being taken care of badly. So that was all out of his deep affection for the dogs. That's why in the modern context it's really hard to understand what the motive is, because sometimes the expression is exact opposite. Right? Because then according to that, then if someone really hated those dogs, then the natural thing, according to this podity, is therefore we should let them live because then they'll suffer. You know? Yeah, so what to do. Yes. Do they taste some Vaikuntha rasa? Yeah, it'll be very meager though, because it's about the pranamoy. That's the point about pranamoy, is you think that the good qualities themselves being applied in a speculative way, you know, a whimsical way, that's actually what's going to obtain bhakti. Not that bhakti is independent and bhakti therefore nourishes itself. You understand? Dharma means I use good qualities according to how they're specified by Shastra. That's why it's called theistic, because we're accepting God's laws. Then in pranamoy, then we're taking the same good qualities, but without Dharma. So it's not according to what's recommended, it's according to what's accepted by the society at the moment. So it's vox populi. Right? That's why it's called atheistic. Right? And so because it's vox populi, so many people say so, it must be true. Right? But according to, you know, truth, you can have a million people say a lie is a truth, and one person saying the lie is a lie, and the one person is correct, not the million. But in the modern context, the million would be correct. So therefore, yes, if there's some intent there, it'll be. But then all the baggage that comes with the pranamoy, that will come in the result also. So even though the intent there is to please Krishna, and so they'll engage in Krishna's service, there will be that element of devotion and purification, upliftment. At the same time, is going to be the results of all that attachment. And the form being a less good form is going to get a less good result. Does that make sense? Let us say I am frying something in a pan, right? A frying pan. There's a really, really good high quality frying pan, and there's a really cheapo one. Okay? Now, even though my intent in using either of them is to please Krishna by cooking something nice for him. Right? But it's recommended you use the good pan, but because I've always used this cheapo pan, my mother used the cheapo pan, everybody in our community uses the cheapo pan. In fact, who does use the nice pan? You know, that's not practical, you know. Does that make sense? Like that, because that comes from farther east, right? It means a good frying pan doesn't come from America. It comes from Europe. So that's farther east, you know. So we're Westerners, so we don't, you know, get involved in such, you know, impractical trivia, right? So, now, they're both, their intent is there, the devotion is there, but you put stuff into the pan and you cook it. Now, once it's cooked, what's going to be the result of the two? So the devotion is there, but then, so you can say, but it has the same devotion. On one sense, yes. But in another sense, we're thinking that, why wouldn't we use the better if it's actually for Krishna? If Krishna is the scriptures, why wouldn't we use the scriptures to please Krishna? Why would we use some speculative thing? Right? Because we're attached. That's why we would use it. Does that make sense? That's the problem. So because we're attached, then we think that it will work good. Because the goal of that is actually what we want. But the problem is the goal we want may be inferior to the goal that we could get with the same endeavor. You know what I'm saying? Using the good pan actually is less work than using the cheap pan. Right? Does that make sense? You can use less ghee. You know, it cooks better. It comes out. Everything comes out better. You know what I'm saying? But it's no. But we've always used bad pans. So therefore, how can I use a good pan? It's against my nature. It's kind of like, you know. That makes sense. Yeah. You had something? No? Yes.
I was just thinking one example of what you were saying about the difference between the intention and the way it's perceived by that individual. Would you say maybe an example of that is the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, when I think it's some of the Yadu members, they get the piece of iron, he pretends to be pregnant, and then the Brahmanas curse them, and it causes the whole downfall. Because it's just a very whimsical kind of activity.
It is, yes. By means, they meant to just have some fun and kind of amuse. Well, more it was about amusing themselves, but they figured the sadhus would kind of be amused also. But the point is being sadhus, then there is the element that it could go either way. Uh-huh. Means they could just take it, oh, they're kids and they're just having some fun. Uh-huh. Or, because they also could take it according to the rules, is they're the sadhus, they're the kshatriyas. Not only a kshatriya, it's their kids. Uh-huh. And they're supposed to be respectful to those, the Brahmins, and especially to, you know, to them as teachers. Mm-hmm. So it could go either way. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, it's recommended you're always respectful and all those things like that. Mm-hmm. Then if there happens to be a light moment, you can try, but even then you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, that would be an example. That would be a nice example. You know, it's meant one way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, oh, it's just like with kids. One kid is crying, the other kid is laughing. Yeah. And the other kid is laughing can't understand why the other kid is crying, because we were just having fun.
Yeah.
But that's the point, is the fun means the both part. Rasa means both parties are included. Mm-hmm. If only one party is included, it's not good. Mm-hmm. Even though the intent was there, and at other occasions it may have worked that way, it didn't work that way, so there's a problem. It has to be adjusted. Right? So you can't just say, well, I meant it like this, and so the other person's just got to drop it. If they do, great. If they don't, you're responsible to correct it. Does that make sense? Yeah, because relationship is the actual thing.
Yeah.
Right? So when we mention the five levels of consciousness, the actual point is the, you know, how you say, the Partiva, Swargiya, and Vaikuntha Rasa. They're situated in those places within consciousness, right? And they have their methods to gain. But the point is it's the rasa that's the actual point. Right? You know, we'll take it that, yes, it is the my rasa, what I taste. But no, it's about the rasa on relationship, not just me and dead matter. Right? Because that's the lowest, that's anamoy, that's your partiva rasa. So you're dealing with the person, but actually you're treating them like partiva rasa. You're just treating them like things. But because everybody does it, it's considered really, really normal. Mm-hmm. Right? At least in the first world. Mm-hmm. And that's what, and actually, if you look at it, what's actually weird about the, you know, from the first world looking at the third world, what's the weird thing? The third world actually cares more about swargiya rasa. And that totally, absolutely freaks out the first world. Therefore, they're backwards, they're sentimental, they're this and that. But if the first world looks at it really carefully, absolutely all of their wealth came from those third worlds. The crown jewels came from India. Basically, all of Europe's wealth came from South America. So the funny part is, all the places that they claim, oh, they're, you know, not as developed, all of their wealth came from them. I mean, absolutely all of it. Otherwise, what do you got in Europe? Wild boars? Bears? Did I miss something? Okay, throw in a few trees. Right? I don't see European economy going on the trade in boar pelts and bear pelts. Right? And you don't really hear much of a lumbering scene there. Northwest in America, yes. But over there, no. Siberia, now they've got some potential. They got trees, those guys. You know what I'm saying? So where did their wealth come from? Now, they used it intelligently and developed and did all that, yes. But if you go into a country, take away all their wealth, then what do you expect? So there will be a problem for a while. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is that so the real scariness is not about wealth. The real scariness is about emotions, that they actually care more. There's more responsibility in interacting with somebody from the third world than there is from the first. The first is to be politically correct and just keep it really light and superficial. Everybody's happy. In the third world, they expect you to respond as a person, actually. Mm-hmm. And that is scary to the first world. You know, this is not scary with a capital S. This is scary where all the letters are capital. This makes sense. So it's rasa that's the main thing, underlying. Right? But as we see, the swargiya rasa is to either get devotional service or to get sense gratification. Right? So the either thing is bhakti, Krishna's sense gratification, or material, our sense gratification. Does that make sense? So that means is when it's worried about other sense gratification, then that's just extended. That's where your pranamoy comes in. And if it's spiritual, but it's not about Krishna's senses, it's just about generically not using the senses, that's where you get mukti. Right? You understand? That's why they're not exact actual points of rasa. The rasa comes from something else. So actually the happiness of mukti comes from anandamaya. But it's just you're using the base level. Right? And the happiness from pranamoy comes from anamoy. Does this make sense? Yeah? You got something? Sri Vitrasura continued, O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, May I again become their servant, so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. My words always glorify those attributes. And my body always engaged in the loving service of your lordship. Right? So he's always thinking, that's the mind, his words, so that's the, you know, that's the, are always engaged, and the body. So body, mind, and words, he's always engaged in the Lord's service. Right? That's all the aspects, right? What do we have? We have the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. Right? The mind is what we think about, what we want, and this and that. The intelligence means the senses and the you know, reasoning process. And then the ego means then the body and the situations we're in. So when those three are engaged in the Lord's service, right, then it works. That makes sense. I'm just impressed that I used three like that. Yeah, it says Americans don't do that. Huh? Kids, yeah. Oh, maybe it is, yeah. The kids so much that they, yeah, the little kids, they always do that. Germany, they do. That's standard. Yeah, good for them.
In the military, too, and you have to communicate using sign language.
Use that. Oh, okay.
Because we have to do it with one hand. This is like 4, 5, and then this is 6, 7, 8, 9, and then this is 10.
Oh. Okay. Oh, okay. Oh, I've seen that before. I didn't know what it was. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. This is, yeah. Okay, so it's in body, mind, and words is engaged. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Seeing that Indra did not throw the thunderbolt, Ritrasuras then thought, oh, what will I say to this rascal Indra who sees everything materially? I will make a request at the lotus feet of my Lord. Then, seeing the Lord appear through his meditation, he spoke this verse. I will again become the servant of the servants who take shelter holding at your lotus feet. Please say why there is such delay. I am tormented out of longing. The Lord says, Very soon I will bring you to my side. Please ask for a boon. So then, may my mind remember you, Lord of my life. May my words sing your qualities. May my body massage your feet, fan you, and give you betel nut. This is the prayer of my mind, voice, and body. So then he's saying that first part, when will it happen? And then he's saying, so what will you, very soon. So then he says, this is what service I want to render. So this is that, you know, what the acharyas are able to bring out. Srila Prabhupada adds, this verse gives the sum and substance of devotional life. One must first become a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, Dasanu Das. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, and he also showed by his own example, that a living entity should always desire to be a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Right? Because we have to be servant of the servant of the servant. Right? Technically, because we're serving the spiritual master who's serving the servants of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? We're serving the spiritual master, serving the, you know, Rupa Goswami, serving Srimati Radha. She's the servant. Her servant is Rupa Goswami. Right? His servant is the spiritual master. So, yeah. Okay. He should always desire to be the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasan Dasaha. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1380. This means that one must accept a spiritual master who comes in the succession and is a servant of the Lord. Under his direction, one must then engage one's three propensities, properties, namely his body, mind, and words. The body should be engaged in physical activity under the order of the master. The mind should think of Krishna incessantly, and one's words should be engaged in preaching the glories of the Lord. One is thus engaged in the loving service of the Lord. One's life is successful. Another way, simple ways, we're serving someone who has a master. We're the servant of the spiritual master, but he's the servant of his spiritual master. Right? So that also then makes it very specific. Does that make sense? Otherwise, if you want to get into the other, then technically we're the servant of 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 the servant. Yeah, that puts us about 12 away. We count the parampara. Right. So therefore, servant of the servant of the servant means we're servant of the servant means we're servant of our spiritual master. But the actual point is the servant's spiritual master has a spiritual master. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if they don't, then you don't want to be the servant of that servant. You don't want to be that servant of that person because they're not a servant. Right? But a servant of the servant of the servant indicates that we're serving the spiritual master who's serving his spiritual master, but he's also a mood of service, so therefore it just keeps going. Right? Sri Vritrasura continued, O my Lord, source of all opportunities, I do not desire to enjoy in Dhruva Loka, the heavenly planets, or the planet where Lord Brahma resides. Nor do I want to be the supreme ruler of all the earthly planets or the lower planetary systems. I do not desire to be master of the powers of mystic yoga, nor do I want liberation if I have to give up your lotus feet. Right? So he's saying all these things. So we may say, one, in general, this is a proper prayer because it's a proper mentality. But in the same way as he's also this powerful that he could have those positions. Right? It said he can conquer the three worlds. He's that powerful. So he doesn't want it. So it's not just he's saying this because it's a nice thing. No, he's actually... So he actually could have... He's not interested. You know? But the point is we can take that mentality, that give up any aspiration for anything else other than the service of the Lord. So that makes it that if it could be engaged in the Lord's service, he would be comfortable doing that, but it has to be engaged in the Lord's service. Without being engaged in the Lord's service, he's not interested. So if to get those things or to be involved in those things, to situate in those things, if that means he's not engaged in service, he's not interested. So technically he's only interested in service to the Lord. And then therefore whatever situation he's in. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Lord says, I give you all results, including swarga and liberation.
There was a footnote.
Ah, there is a footnote. Footnote 5. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 17, entitled Analysis of the Goal of Devotional Service, Prayojana Vichar, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. First Prayojana verse we've come across. Yeah. At least since we've been putting it, you know, as footnotes.
Yeah.
Have we come across other prayers in there? Generally, most of it's been Abhideya and occasionally Sambandha. So this is. So the point is he doesn't want anything other than the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. That's Prayojana Vichar. Right? I only want devotional service. I don't want any of these other things. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The Lord says, I give you all results, including swarga and liberation, right? Because it's a discussion about results. Please take everything. Shaking his head, Vritrasura emphatically refuses, saying, no, no, no. Naka prishtam means swarga. In separation from you, my life airs are burning. How will swarga make me happy? Meeting you, I will attain the three blessings mentioned in the previous verse. Right? It means being able to engage body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. What is the use of accepting the happiness of Svarga? Because it's only going to engage the senses. Right? So, but the point is that unless the senses are connected to the Lord, there's no satisfaction. And that means connected to the Lord in pure devotion. We can do it in a mixed way, and then we'll get a mixed result. There's something very nice about it because it's devotional service, but at the same time, there's something distracting or disturbing about it because of the mix. Right? Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada adds, a pure devotee never desires to gain material opportunities by rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. A pure devotee desires only to engage in loving service to the Lord in the constant association of the Lord and his eternal associates, as stated in the previous verse. Dasanu daso bhavitashmi, as confirmed by Narottam Das Thakur. Tadera charanasevi bhakta sanivas janame janame hoy e abhilas. To serve the Lord and the servants of his servants in the association of devotees is the only objective of a pure, unalloyed devotee. Right? So it's not that we're just serving the servant, but it's in the association of devotees. Because otherwise, sometimes you find the neophyte, they're happy to serve the spiritual master, but you know, everybody else is a problem. You know? No, it has to be, it all goes together. Dhritarasura continued, O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings always look for their mother to return and feed them, as small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. Footnote 6. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamarichimala, chapter 13, entitled Sadhana Bhakti, executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Right? So, like this is one always wants to be engaged in devotional service. Right? We understand? So here's is different, because it means all these look very similar. The other one is actually the This is that one only wants to be engaged in the service. The other is that you only have the mood that the Lord is only what's important. Right? Even though both of them are talking about endeavors or results. Right? But the point is there the result is only Krishna's pleasure. While here it's that only activities that are connected to the Lord. Yes. In that previous one. Because otherwise it may seem, you know, in some sense. Right? Because before he says, I only want to do these activities for you. But that was prayojan. Because it's not about the activities. It's about that devotion to the Lord. And that'll be expressed through those activities. Here it's specifically talking about the mood of those activities. May that those activities just be done in connection with you. Does that make sense? Not quite.
Prayojana is about the mood, and this one is
the results. It means you're always going to have the mood of bhakti, but the results. So therefore, to get results is an activity. But here it's talking about the activity, you know, in being done in that mood. Yes, so here it's about the activity done in that mood. The other is about the mood being expressed through those activities. You know, so it's slight, but it's enough.
And this chapter is about taking shelter of the holy name too. So it's the mood of longing and separation, anxiety that should be there in the chanting of the holy name.
Mm. Hmm. Where is this? Yeah, so those means you can always, after it ends there, then put another, you know, a further little paragraph where if those things come up when you're going through, then just put that in. You know, whenever you make those connections, put it in. So it's clear that this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then this is our note. So that's what we said. Yes, well, that's why we're associating with him, hoping that one day these 20 sub, you know, these 20 finer explanations of Dasamul make sense, or even hoping that Dasamul makes sense, or even hoping that, you know, Sambandabhideya Prayojana makes sense. You know.
Huh?
Yes, yes. 3 is already a problem. Let alone 4. And then that goes back to just 2. It's just Krishna and the devotees. In his Priti Sandarbha, Anucheta 72, Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, the word ajapaksha means baby birds whose wings are still undeveloped and who thus have no power to fly and are not independent. Oh, ajatapaksha. These baby birds take shelter of their mother, Mataram, and their mother is very merciful to them. It is seen that baby birds have great love, priti, for their mothers. With the same kind of love, Ritrasura here yearns to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this example, the baby birds are nourished by the mother, but their lives are maintained. By her, they are made happy. However, if the reader is displeased with this example and has no faith in it, then the speaker of this verse gives another example. The example that begins with the word stanyam. This is the example of the calf who yearns to attain its mother's udder, stanyam. By the mother cow's udder, the calf is nourished and delighted. This example is better than the preceding example of the birds. Tied up by the human master, the small calf cannot approach its mother's udder. Therefore, for a long time, the calf is troubled by hunger, shudartha. This example is better than the previous one, for in a cow's body there is a greater opportunity to manifest affection. However, if one feels the example of the cow and calf and the example of the baby bird and its mother are too different in cause and effect from the relationship of the devotee and the Supreme Lord, then another example is given in this verse, right? Because the mother can only basically just feed the bird. Cows can, you know, lick the calf, do so many more things. There's much more ability to express. Right? Does that make sense? Plus, you see, is that there's more of the udder is more directly connected with the mother, right? With the bird, they're just bringing some food in their mouth. The principle is the same, but in case the example, you can't relate to it, then here's one that's more. And if that one's not, then he gives the third, right? Sorry? Okay. Then another example is given in this verse, an example that begins with the word priyam. Here the example is given as two steadfast lovers whose love never changes, who love each other in youth, in old age, and up to the moment of death. In this example, the morose, Vishanna, wife, Priya, longs to see Didrikshate, her beloved husband, Priyam, who is always away from home. Oh, who is away from home? No. That was a Freudian slip there. Who's always away from home. Yeah. Yushitam. Here Vritasura says, as she longs to see her husband with her own eyes, so my heart longs to see you. In the first two parts of this analogy, the baby bird and the calf are themselves the agent that performs the action. However, in the last part of the analogy, it is not Vritasura himself, but rather his heart that performs the action. Right, so we're going... Yeah. The analogy here is of the variety called Ulleka. In this way, the unchanging love of Vritasura's heart is described. He wishes that his heart may become like a bumblebee drawn to the sweetness of the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord. By this Ulleka analogy, is described the devotees being maintained by the Lord and the devotees finding happiness in the Lord. Thinking of the good fortune of directly seeing the Supreme Lord is an impossible attainment for him. Vritrasura, his eyes filled with tears, speaks the prayer in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.11.27. Because it is filled with these extraordinary prayers of pure spiritual love, prema, the description of Vritrasura's death is included in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas also. Right? Because otherwise, you know, you don't need to get into the details of the, that, like Hiranyaksha, when he dies, it's not that you get those last, few, coughs and, and please take care of, grandma, Elka, and, all those kind of stuff. Does that make sense? So you don't have it. Yes. Yes. So you see the fineness in being able to define even just within relationships, mm-hmm. right, that the acharyas are able to appreciate. So this is, which was this? This was? Preeti. Okay, so that's, we have another 2 years till we get there. Mm-hmm. No? Because Preeti is the last of the Sandarbhas. Yeah, so that'll be in the third year. How do you say? Kick it off with the opening of Vedanta Sutra and then get into the other Sandarbhas and finish up with Preeti. Mm-hmm. Yes. Srila Prabhupada adds, a pure devotee always yearns to associate personally with the Lord and render service unto him. The examples given in this regard are most appropriate. A small baby bird is practically never satisfied except when the mother bird comes to feed it. A small calf is not satisfied unless allowed to suck the milk from the mother's udder. And a chaste, devoted wife whose husband is away from home is never satisfied until she has the association of her beloved husband. Sri Vritrasura concluded, O my Lord, my Master, I am wandering throughout this material world as a result of my fruitive activities. Therefore, I simply seek friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees. My attachment to my body, wife, children, and home is continuing by the spell of your external energy. But I wish to be attached to them no longer. Let my mind, my consciousness, and everything I have be attached only to you. Footnote 7. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Arkamrithi Mala, chapter 15. Entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukulya Vichara, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book, right? So Abhideya means connecting things to Krishna. So here is he doesn't want to connect anything to Krishna but just seeing Krishna in devotion. Right? So he's even willing to simplify the secondary forms that he uses to express his devotion through to just make it very straightforward. So that's the point. That's the difference between the Nivriti Pravriti. Nivriti means you keep it really simple, so there's only a few items you use to express that devotion. You still have to not be attached, but still there's very few. Pravriti means you're dealing with much more variety of things to express that devotion to Krishna. Therefore, how you say, body, wife, family, children, home, all these different things. So all that is used to connect to the Lord. So it's just a matter of one's willing to give those up. In other words, the unattachment to secondary forms to serve the Lord, that's essential. Does that make sense?
Seeking friendship in the association of your pious and enlightened devotees, seeking sangha.
Yes, so that's the one. That is what's going to take you back to Godhead. Because actually, the association of pure devotees, that's what takes you back to Godhead. Then you apply what you gain in that association. Then things move forward. But the actual dynamic aspect is the association of devotees and then taking what we learn in that association seriously and practically apply it in our life. Because Krishna always associates with devotees, so we would associate with devotees. Otherwise, if every devotee just directly associated with Krishna, then, basically we would have to have unlimited little prince scenarios where everyone has their own little dinky planet with nothing on it. Right? No? Yes. And it gets boring after a while. I think even he gets bored, right? Yeah, I don't. It's been a long time, but I remember just seeing the planet there and him standing on it. That's all I remember from the story.
He had a flower.
Yeah. Hmm?
He had?
A
potted plant.
Oh, he had a potted plant. Okay. Okay. So. It's getting exciting now. But there's no water, right? Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. At that moment, Ritrasura became humble. Oh, how can such a low rascal as me attain such good fortune? Let me remain in this world. Praise in this way in this verse. Let me have friendship with the devotees of the Lord, and let me not have friendship with persons attached to their bodies, children, houses, and wives. I have not had association with their devotees, and thus I have experienced insurmountable sorrow. Because he's saying, I give up attachment too. And we see as he just appears, and then he's out on the battlefield. We didn't hear about him, you know, getting married, having kids, and then, you know, all the different things like that. You know, problems getting into the, you know, tennis club. You know, all that. We didn't hear about all that stuff. Right? You know, he'd probably have a real mean backhand. Right?
So he's probably remembering his birthday certificate.
Yes, I mean that. But the point is there is the principle of being attached to these. So he's giving up that, as we saw before, as anything that's not connected to the Lord, he's giving that up. So this is a further, just giving up the attachment too. But then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur brings out more is that a giving up attachment or association with those who have attachment for these. Because that's important. It's not about those who have this, because he says the devotees. He doesn't say, I'm only interested in, you know, associating with the, you know, brahmachari, you know, devotees of the Lord. He just says, no, the pure devotees. So it's those who have attachment to, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. Those who engage in the Lord's service, that's not the problem, right? That's what we were making that point before. Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Those who engage in the Lord's service, in pure devotion, we want their association, right? Those who engage in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha for their own satisfaction, that we avoid. Right? Does that make sense? So we always look for association that's progressive. Right? Someone who sees that bhakti is the main thing and dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are not actually the goals. Right?
That's noteworthy. He's not saying, let me give up my body, wife, and children and home, but he's saying, let me give up my attachment to my body, wife.
Yes, very good. Very good point. Right? You see, so he's... The point is anything can be engaged in the Lord's service, but the attachment to it, that has to be given up. So Grihastha engages all these in the Lord's service, but his attachment to it, that should be given up. We take it that, oh, if we give up the attachment, we give them up. But that comes from impersonalism. Right? The path of jnana is if I don't have attachment, I give it up. Karma is I only do it because I have attachment. Right? That's why it's thought only an attached person can do a good job. Right? Because someone who's not attached won't deal with it. But that means that we're not used to bhakti, which means I'll deal the best because I can deal with it without attachment. Right? It's just like who's going to set... Let's say you dislocate your arm. Right? Or a person dislocates their arm. Okay, who's going to put it back into place the best? The doctor or your mom? Right? You know, unless, of course, your mom's the doctor, then, you know, hey, bingo. You know, but, you know, that's probably not the part of your mom that you, you know, think of fondly, you know, like that. You understand? Because of attachment, you can't do very well. You know, there's nice emotional support and everything, but the doctor, he's not attached. But he's dutiful. He knows his duty. He knows the science of it. So therefore, he can do that. So that's what's being brought out. This is the part that's hard to understand. Because we think, oh, unless people are attached, they won't do a good job. You know, therefore, you make them attached, make it into a job, right? Instead of it being for free, where they won't be attached, we'll pay them salary, and then they'll do a better job. Personally, I've yet to see that. I really, in devotional service, like running a temple, or I have yet to see that. but it's popular. Right? So that's the illusion, is that we think the attachment's going to make things work, and the detachment means we won't deal. But as Prabhu pointed out, it's not. He's saying, let me give up the attachment for these. He doesn't say the involvement in these. Right? Yes.
Strange enough, I attended first interview for a company. It's almost like gambling. They say first thing is you should not be attached to money. Then only you can gamble.
Yes. Means no, but you have to be attached to work at it, but you have to be long-term attached rather than short-term attached.
But the principle is like you say.
Yeah. Yeah, no. That's the way everything works. You know, it's like, I think the saying is, if you can go to, you know, the window and toss, you know, $100 bills out the window and watch them fly away, then you can function on the stock market. Otherwise, you can't. You know, if it freaks you out, then don't get involved in the stock market. So, yeah. I don't know if that means that someone who races cars, then they can toss, you know, Ferraris out the window and not be disturbed. I'm not sure if that example would apply there. But yes, that the whole point is if you're dealing in the present, then you're dealing in goodness. So there must be knowledge of detachment. But in this example, so it applies at all levels. So if one has this, one will be successful materially. But the actual focus in this is not on the secondary itself. It's on that primary, that I don't have the attachment. Right? Because the other is, if you have attachment, you can't do it nicely. Right? These were previous chapters. In fourth canto, we were discussing this very much, like that. But now it's more on this mentality of being able to give up. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, this story, because this is basically the end of this canto, you're bringing the first six cantos to a conclusion, is that all these different things only have a value connected to the Lord. So it's the Lord that's of value, the devotion to the Lord that's of value. It's not engaging all these secondary elements in the Lord's service, which we were dealing with in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Right, second canto is shown, it means you're seeing the engagement of the Pandavas, you're seeing the universal form, you're seeing the Shankya, you know, and then how people successfully did that, Priyavrata and others, you know, Prithu Maharaj, how they successfully actually engaged that. But now we're coming across that now we have to go beyond that. It's the mentality that's there. That mood is actually what we're trying to get to. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean that we leave these things, because that otherwise, why are the first cantos teaching us the technique of using them in Lord's service on a transcendental platform? But we actually have to come to the point where we don't even care about using them. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, important verse 6:11:23. Traivargi kayasya vigatam asmat patir vitatte purushasya sakra tato numeyo bhagavat prasado yo durlabho kinchana gocharo nyayi. O Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead forbids His devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Right? So, uselessly means if they're engaged in the Lord's service, that's usefully. But if you're just engaging because you should, because it's your dharma, or just because you want the results, then that's useless. Or you want liberation. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Ritrasura. So that the Lord brings about this mentality, or creates an environment to develop this mentality, that's the Lord's mercy. That's why then we see that sometimes, you know, just on occasion, Krishna takes things away. No? Probably had that occasional, like, yeah. So then how does that work? Is because then the situation is favorable in which we are not attached. But the whole point is not being unattached, because moksha is not a point. It's about being attached to Krishna. So it's not that we're giving up the attachment here, it's becoming attached to Krishna. So if you're attached to Krishna, you don't have to not work with the field of attachment. Right? But if we're getting distracted by it, Krishna may take it away or not give it. Right? So that makes sense. Just so that we learn to attach ourselves to Krishna. Fun. Okay, yeah. All those ones before us, you know, one and two of these and something there. Or, yeah, there's nothing here. Okay, this is getting good. Notice the Vasutraya questions. Should you be pleased with the addition of these things? Just to bring it out. In other words, they would have been included before, and you know, in our deep analytical study of the chapter, we would have already included them already in our essay, you know, in essential form, naturally, right? Yeah. But here it's just to, you know, bring it out, since Bhaktivinoda Thakur has brought out this aspect, so therefore we're, you know, just to, you know, show others how you actually, you know, what you actually meant there. Yeah. No? Yes. Yeah, it's not. Chapter 12. Ritrasura's glorious death. Pratigya. The real qualification of the liberated soul is that he remains Krishna conscious. Some North Indians. Huh? Yeah, because you only hear that like in Vrindavan when they're on the what do you call it? On the tungas or sometimes like that, then they're all going and clapping.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that and singing. In the back of a bullock cart, you hear it, or the back of a tractor. You know, they're all going packed in the tractor going and they're all singing.
Yeah.
The particular of this chapter. Okay, no. The real qualification of the liberated soul is that he remains Krishna conscious, undisturbed by the actions and reactions of the material energy. Material energy is going to transform. It creates variety. What's the variety for? To make variety in the devotional service offered to Krishna. So the point is the real qualification of the liberated soul is he always is remembering Krishna, right? We're looking at the negative because it's the material world. But in the spiritual world, the variety, the constant change and variety that's there in the spiritual energy is to give different opportunities to serve Krishna, body, mind, and words. So the material energy is doing the same thing. It's creating the variety to use in the Lord's service, because she's a devotee, she's doing it all for that. That's what the material world's here for, is to be a servant of Krishna. But if the living entity is not interested in being a servant of Krishna, then what happens? We get disturbed by it. So it just points out that the liberated souls don't become disturbed because they don't mean the spiritual. They see it all in connection to Krishna. So here, they see it all in connection to Krishna. If you see it in connection with ourself and our own desires, we'll be disturbed because that change is always going to be a problem. But that change in the spiritual world is not a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah? The particular of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 15. And is further elaborated throughout the chapter, but especially in the following places. Not knowing that the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes, fools and rascals try to take credit for victory or defeat themselves. But everything is actually under control of the Lord. So here, they take the credit for both victory and defeat. So both are mundane. So this modern concept that someone's done something wrong and they have to take that responsibility, they have to be remorseful, I want to see it, I have to experience it. This is actually then saying, then they're the doer. So it's actually totally mundane, not even just, you know, a little bit okay. It's just totally mundane. Right? You know, it's better than the guy who doesn't actually see anything wrong.
You know? Another common thing is one takes credit for the victory themselves, but blames the defeat on other people.
Yes, that's also a very good point. Very good point. Yeah. Just thinking of the ogre, you know, in the shop, and every time he turns around, something gets knocked over. When people look at him, he just goes, "What?" Yeah. So. Is that, yes? Yes. So. Yeah. And so it's not that, okay, we give the credit to others and we, you know, when it goes and if anything wrong, we take ourselves. That's pious. But the actual point is this: I'm not the doer either way. So it's actually not. So the victory and the defeat, I don't become disturbed. I'm always Krishna conscious. I'm always absorbed in the Lord. So whatever the situation, I connect it to the Lord. If it's victorious, the results are for the Lord. If it's not, then in that situation, I try to remember the Lord. Then next, we should not be jubilant in victory or morose in defeat. We should make a sincere effort to implement the will of Krishna or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we should not be concerned with victory or defeat. Our only duty is to work sincerely so that our activities may be recognized by Krishna. Purport to verse 7. Okay? Verse 12 summarizes questions and answers. The rhetorical question asked in this chapter does not fall under the study. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 12th chapter describes how Indra, discouraged by Vritrasura's prowess, becomes enlightened by him and after praising him, kills him. After Vritrasura finished speaking, he released his trident against King Indra with great anger. But Indra, using his thunderbolt, which was many times more powerful than the trident, broke the trident to pieces and cut off one of Vritrasura's arms. Right. So, before this, he would just use his club so he could maybe deflect it or something like that. But here, the defense also was offense. Right. He destroys the trident and cuts off his arm. You know, so much superior weaponry, much superior fighting skill. But he's only using it because of that, now that Krishna consciousness and that faith in Krishna. Before he used it because he's Indra and he's the big guy and so he may come out with his thunderbolt, but it appeared he didn't. Otherwise he would have used it instead of the club. It appeared he just came out on the battlefield. But because the general demigods were doing quite well and him being the king, he'll just be there as the commander, while others will actually be releasing their weapons. Then when that didn't work, then he steps forward, then with his club. Just like Vritrasura is there, all the demons, they release their weapons, but he is the leader, is there commanding. But then when they all flee, then he comes forward. Right? Counters Indra's, attack, and then makes, after, you know, discussion, then makes his own attack.
He's having this discussion with one arm, too.
Yes, and all this is with one arm. Yeah, you know, like the, what do you say?
The Black Knight.
Yes, the Black Knight. Exactly. So he sees how far one can see, how efficient is, you know, this realization. You know. Nevertheless, Vritrasura used his remaining arm to strike Indra with an iron mace, making the thunderbolt fall from Indra's hand. Indra, being very ashamed of this, did not pick up the thunderbolt from the ground, but Vritrasura encouraged King Indra to pick it up and fight. Vritrasura then spoke to King Indra as follows, instructing him very well, right? So now this is with one arm, right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, is the cause of victory and defeat. Not knowing that the Supreme Lord is the cause of causes, fools and rascals try to take credit for victory or defeat themselves, right? So here Indra is trying to, you know, he was victorious in the first, attack. But then in the retaliation, then he was defeated. So he's thinking he's the one that is victorious. He's the one that's defeated. But everything is actually under the control of the Lord. No one but Him has any independence. The Purusha, the enjoyer, and Prakriti, the enjoyed, are under the control of the Lord. For it is by His supervision that everything works systematically. not seeing the hand of the Supreme in every action, a fool considers himself the ruler and controller of everything. Right? So here, fool is how you consider it. We're not talking about, you know, how much IQ they have or how much skill they have. Right? Because generally we'll take it, oh, that means, you know, someone who just is unable to do anything. They can't function at all. Nor meaning even they can function so well. Indra, he's the king of heaven. He runs the place. We don't hear about, you know, that this is, how you call it? They don't refer to him like they refer in India to Tuklak, right? Isn't it Tuklak? Yeah. He was a bit strange as a king. I think he kept moving back and forth between the summer palace and winter palace that, you know, in doing so, he actually destroyed his whole army. Right? Yeah. So, not like that. He's actually very competent. But he's a fool because he doesn't see the connection to the Lord. He doesn't see the soul. That's real intelligence. That's the... When one understands, however, that the real controller is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is freed from the relativities of the world, such as distress, happiness, fear, and impurity. Thus Indra and Vritrasura not only fought, but also engaged in philosophical discourses. Then they began to fight again. Right? Because you're talking about very elevated persons here. They appreciate. The point is he's speaking these things, and he's appreciating them. You know, we're not talking here about the, you know, what's that, the something that, I can't remember, it's in the sea, the Kraken or something like that? No?
Big octopus?
Huh?
Big octopus.
Yeah, it's something very, very big. I've never seen it. So, they're able to appreciate. So Vritrasura is there based on these principles. And he's fighting based on these principles. He's performing the duties of the demon. So he's been called to fight Indra. Right? And so that's, you know, in other words, technically the intent was he should be called to cause the death of Indra. But actually he's been called to be killed by Indra. Right? So therefore, now he's performing his duties. So Indra also is performing, but because of his attachment, he forgets the philosophy, he forgets the Dharma. So then through the proper discussions, then Indra remembers his Dharma and then is able to fight. These are the higher principles. These are higher personalities. They appreciate this higher principle. Like that. So even in the material world, if someone does fight on this, on, you know, something similar like this, generally they're respected. Right? The great generals respect others who fight like this. Like that. You know, the people who are, you know, their attachment, their envy, this and that, they just kill them. They don't worry about it. But these others, then they let them go. There's a, who's it? There's something very famous. He's now known as kind of the god of war in China. Big, long beard.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name? Kuai Yu. Yeah, so Kuai Yu, he was some walla back a few thousand years ago.
Three states. Story of three states.
Yeah, it goes back. And that was with Chow Chow?
Yeah,
okay. That's the guy's name. Don't laugh in front of him, he'll cut off your head. He was the prime minister of the you know, empire.
It's not the dog food.
Huh?
Not the dog breed.
No, not the dog breed, yes. Even though they're quite cute also, and Chinese. Like that. Yeah, I saw one in London. We were going to some big, fat guy. You know, they're so big, but they look like they're like little kids. Really, really far. So, he was then fighting for someone else. Like that. What, Libyan or whatever it is. He's fighting for someone, huh? Liu Bei. Liu Bei. So he fights for him. But at some point, because of some reason, he's now fighting for Chow Chow. Right? But in that, and then Chow Chow asks him intentions, and he says, you know, after I've paid my debt, I'm going back to Li Biao. How do you say?
Liu
Bei. Liu Bei. But it's Liu Bei, right? Liu Bei. There's tones. We have the higher, the lower, then the up to down and down to up, right?
Four.
Yeah, so like that. You know, Leo, like you say, if you say it straight, it doesn't mean Leo. Leo, Bay. Leo, Bay. Okay, now we got it. No, that's his full name. Yeah. So then they're fighting there, but then when he finds out his intention is to go back, he's fought up to the point where he feels, I've paid back my debt, because he's gotten so much facility from Chow Chow. Then, knowing this, Chow Chow sends him this immense gift. And when it's delivered, he doesn't open it. He just leaves. And so when the ministers, then Chow Chow asks, what happened? He said he didn't open it, he just left. So they say, should we chase him? You know, capture him, kill him. He says, no. You know, because he's such a high-grade person. Out of respect, he just lets him go. Because his whole point is you respect your master, then you respect yourself. You know, that's it's kind of like his point is why don't I have more guys like this in my army? You know, why does only, how do you say, Liu Bei, why only he has a guy like this? You know, because he's a small-time little regional guy, and I'm I don't have guys like this. Yes, he doesn't have such people. But he respected, because he could see. So he's on a higher grade, so he could see. No, you don't bother this guy. Because he's just doing his duty. He'll always do things right. It's not going to be political. It's going to be straightforward. It's going to be according to the rules. Right, you know, so it'll be appropriate. So, in other words, you followed Sun Tzu, he followed Sun Tzu, everybody's happy. Okay.
Can you see like a demon carry on his duty? Is it glorious?
Yeah. But if he's not Krishna conscious, then that glory has a limit.
But still, it's rightful.
Yes. Performing one's duties is always proper. Demon just means they're not interested in devotional service. You know, in other words, material duties are glorious on the material platform. But what Vritrasura is pointing out is he's going beyond that attachment, that these material glories aren't actually attractive to him. Right? Because otherwise, he mentioned before, wife, children, you know, family, you know, how you say, wealth, home. These are all pious activities that there's a glory for. Isn't it? So that's the whole point, is that there's these things are great. One performs one's duties, the interactions are really great, then it works out. You know, it's just like whatever it is, you know, how you say. Yeah. So it's trying to think of one. The only problem is I can only think of one in relation with Chow Chow again. Yeah, and these are thousands of years old. But in other words, he had this, I think it's the same guy, Liu Bei. Then his wife was respected by Chow Chow as the best girl in the whole empire. Right? Unless it was someone else connected with Liu Bei. Unless it was another guy. But whatever it is, he just considered her, she was the best. Like that. That's another thing.
But
No. It was that because he knew the girl from before she was married. But somehow or another she got married to her. So there's a respect. You see, even in the Vedic histories, you see, now and again, he's like Draupadi. You know, someone who could give, or, what is it? Yeah, Draupadi's there, Sita. you know, the Rukmini, all these ones, is that they're considered very glorious in that because of the relationship. But we see in the relationship they perform their duties very well. Otherwise, how are they so glorious? Draupadi wouldn't be so prominent if her husbands didn't perform their duties so well. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, or the home. Why is it that, you know, the place of the Kurus is so special? Because of the performance of duty. But if the emperor is in Ujjain, Ujjain's the big place. Or if the emperor is in Pataliputra, then that's the great place. Or Ayodhya, or Mathura. So why is it? It moves around, the glory. Because of the duties being performed. Right? Does that make sense? So because if you perform your duties, that's special. Because ideas, what are duties for? What are they actually for? To elevate. But to elevate oneself to Krishna consciousness. So in other words, all the Shastric recommendations that are there are simply to elevate you to Krishna consciousness. So anyone who will follow the Vedic version, therefore, is glorious. Whether they're a devotee or whether they're a demon, it doesn't matter. Because you're following God's laws. At least you're accepting the authority of the Supreme on the platform of Brahman or Paramatma. Minimum. Devotee, it's Krishna's rules. That's why we follow them. This whole thing, oh, it's Indian, it's Vedic, and it's separated from Krishna. But since when is it separate from Krishna? You know what I'm saying? That's a trick of the academics. Oh, it's just Indian. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so then that's the problem. They don't see the actual connection. The actual. So does this make sense? Is that okay? Yeah. But the point is it's still going to be, as mentioned, as we get into higher things, you're not getting the full benefit, which is Krishna conscious. So since it hasn't gotten you Krishna conscious, technically that's why it is a waste of time. Does that make sense? If they fight according to the rules, that's why Virtusura is saying, that means they get piety, it doesn't mean that it's, what's it? Because they're demons, that's what they're supposed to do. But uplifted to what? Just piety. That's why Virtusura is saying to the demons, that why you're running in fear. It says you either win the battle and enjoy the spoils of war, or you're killed in battle and enjoy in the heavenly planets. So the point is why you're running from the battle, right? So either they'll get the results of their immediate endeavor, or the long term results, that they go to a higher, but it still will be material. That's the whole point. It won't be spiritual. That's the difference. Yeah. Okay. Okay. No one but him, or Krishna, has any independence. The Purusha, the enjoyer, and Prakriti, the enjoyed, are under the control of the Lord, for it is by his supervision that everything works systematically. Right? That's the point. It's by his control, everything works in a systematic way. So that's called science. The observation of Krishna's systematic control we call science. But it's atheistic because we don't understand it's God's control. Theism means you accept it is. Atheism means you don't. So if you work with that control, that's pious. You accept it being coming from the Lord, that's more pious. Right? If you accept that, okay, there's laws of nature, I follow them, that's pious. You accept that these laws come from God, that's more pious. Right? Does that make sense? You perform your duties by these laws without attachment, that's more pious than that. But the best is I follow these rules of Dharma, the laws of God, to please God. That's bhakti. right? Or you can say to please God for God's satisfaction, because you could also please God to get what you want. Mm-hmm. So then you're using devotion for yourself. But the point is, so the highest is to please God without anything for yourself. Does that make sense? So in other words, the materialist who doesn't really include God, not hardly, right? So then there may be bhakti misra karma, or bhakti misra jnana, or it just may be karma and jnana. You just follow the rules. Smarter will include the Lord, right? But smartest is the devotee. But of devotees, one who worships the Lord and then likes the benefits, that's not as good as the one who worships the Lord only to please the Lord. Right? You see? Okay. Not seeing the hand of the Supreme in every action, a fool considers himself the ruler and controller of everything. Right? So we think we're doing it. That's the point. Modern man thinks all rule and control everything. It was much bigger before. I think the biggest was in the 50s into the 60s, you know, kind of started petering out in the 70s like this. That man can control everything. We control nature, we control this, we control that. You know, if there's a problem, we'll work it out. We're the man, right? But then they eventually found out they're not so much the man, and so they just kind of settled back into what they can control. Sorry, the 8 o'clock.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur.